Welcome to Making Waves, independent voices for peace and justice, your local connection to the world on WSCA LP 106.1 FM, Portsmouth Community Radio. This is Amy Antonucci, and I'm happy to introduce our show to you today, March 25th, 2006. Our focus today is on women changing the world for our last show of Women's History Month. Here's what we have coming up for you. We'll start with a bit of news and coverage of the Concord, New Hampshire protest of the war and occupation in Iraq, which happened last Saturday. It comes to us from WSCA's own Tim Stone. We'll follow with an interview of Seacoast, New Hampshire resident Andrea LeBlanc of 9/11 Families for Peaceful Tomorrows, who will tell us about the upcoming exhibition she's worked to bring to New Hampshire entitled The F Word, Images of Forgiveness. Our second hour will start with Steve Diamond talking with Ann Miller of New Hampshire Peace Action about her upcoming peace delegation to Palestine and Israel. We end with Between the Lines, independent radio out of Bridgeport, Connecticut. We'll also have music, announcements, and more, so stay with us.
This is Steve Diamond with a couple news stories from the past week that you may have missed. 1,000 more sailors expected to join ground forces in Iraq. From the Seattle Times. 3 years after Baghdad fell, the Navy is poised to dramatically increase the number of sailors in Iraq and Afghanistan, filling gaps in Army and Marine Corps units. The seamen, called individual augmentees, support ground operations thousands of miles from the nearest port in deployments that can be far different from the Navy's traditional role. Last year, about 400 sailors from Navy bases at Everett, Whidbey Island, Bangor, and Bremerton were called to fill specific jobs ashore. Most involved security, communications, construction, and administrative duties on year-long deployments. For example, some help staff prisons and other drive trucks. New requests for Navy personnel in the Middle East and Afghanistan are coming in weekly. There are 4,000 sailors in Iraq, a number that is expected to increase to 5,000 in the next few months. It's unclear how many more sailors will be called to serve ashore by the end of the year. The sailors do not perform raids or attack enemy positions, but some of their missions, particularly defusing homemade bombs, can be dangerous. Though most sailors sent to Iraq and Afghanistan volunteer, Navy officials say everyone should be prepared to serve. Lieutenant Trey Brown, a Navy spokesman, said, "If you're wearing a uniform, you're a volunteer for whatever the military needs from you. We want to take the people who are more eager, but everybody has got to be ready to go." Not all sailors are enthusiastic about the Navy's support role. A Navy Academy graduate based in San Diego received orders on Wednesday to report to another base in 12 days and ship out to Iraq, even after he specifically turned down a request to volunteer. The officer, who wished to remain anonymous, said, "Rumsfeld says the Army is not stretched too thin, but you have sailors for leaving the Army. A little straightforwardness goes a long way. We'd like the same from the folks on high." And from the Bangor Daily News, war protesters target Collins' speech. Anti-war protesters targeted a speech by U.S. Senator Susan Collins at the University of Maine, asking her to denounce the Bush administration for its handling of the Iraq War. Robert Shutterly of Brooksville, one of about 100 protesters at the event, said, "We cannot understand how you can make a claim to either ethics or conscience unless you repudiate this administration. Otherwise, you are complicit in their crimes against humanity." Shetterly's brief comments were a reference to the title of Collins' lecture, The Ethics of Conscience, Continuing the Legacy of Margaret Chase Smith. Collins, a Republican, was the featured speaker at the afternoon event presented by UM's Margaret Chase Smith Policy Center, named for the state's first woman senator. Collins' speech itself did not address the war, instead focusing on the need for lobbying reform and ethics requirements for lawmakers. Senator Collins told the crowd of about 500 people, "Integrity is not about being perfect. It is, however, about accepting responsibility and striving to learn from mistakes. Integrity in public office is about making ethical decisions, standing tall for one's principles, and always striving to do better." Most of the buzz before Collins' speech was about the carefully planned demonstration, which featured protesters dressed in black wearing on their backs the number 2,319, the latest tally of Americans killed in the conflict. Collins, noting that she has met with many groups opposed to the war, at times has been skeptical of the situation in Iraq. Earlier this month, she co-wrote a letter to the president, calling on him to step up pressure on the new Iraqi government to reach a political compromise in the midst of the spiral of violence, with the goals of preventing civil war and expediting the exit of U.S. troops. That letter, however, meant little to Shetterly. He and the other protesters lined the hallway outside the auditorium after the speech, holding signs that read, "Where's the ethics in torture?" and "Where's the ethics in killing children?" During that demonstration, protester Carol Whelan of Hope repeated her group's request for a public forum with the senator. She said, "They need to show as much courage as they have demanded from our soldiers."
Thanks to Steve Diamond for those news stories. And now we go to Tim Stone, who's reporting from last week's march and protest in Concord, New Hampshire, against the Iraq War.
We're here in Concord on a Saturday morning. It's a good wind blowing right now. It's pretty chilly, probably a wind chill 20 degrees or below. It looks like we have a gathering of about 200 people so far that have gathered for this march from the New Hampshire National Guard Armory down to the state capitol. There's lots of flags and signs and peace symbols. Bring them home now. How did our oil get under their sand out of Iraq now? Bring them home now.
My name is Ann Miller. I'm director of New Hampshire Peace Action. And Peace Action is part of a coalition of different groups that have put together this peaceful march today on the third anniversary of the invasion of Iraq.
And do you have any idea how many people you expect to come out today? Or?
We don't. Looking at the crowd now, I mean, it looks like, what, 200 people? What do you think?
That's what I'd estimate, around 200.
Yep. And we're going to be marching to the State House, where we're going to have some singing and then a ceremony of remembrance of hope at the War Memorial in State House Plaza.
Great. And is there, if someone wants to get involved with New Hampshire Peace Action, how would they do so?
Sure, you can call us at 603-228-0559 or visit our website at www.nhpeaceaction.org.
Great, well, let's hope it all goes smoothly and we stay warm on our way down to the State Capitol Plaza.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Martha Yeager. I work with the American Friends Service Committee, which is co-sponsoring the event with New Hampshire Peace Action. This is marking the third anniversary of the start of the war. I think there are growing numbers of people who may have been unsure at the beginning that war was wrong, but that as the time has gone on, increasing numbers of people are feeling that this was the wrong war at the wrong time. I think there are also people who rightly feel a lot of responsibility for the damage that we've done, and want to call attention to that damage as well as to the damage to our own troops. And so we're beginning at the National Guard Armory. We believe that the Guard should be at home, shouldn't be over there, and we'll then walk down to the State House, which symbolizes the seat of power in the state.
Great. So stay warm and have a good march.
Thanks.
Explain what brought you out this morning.
I'm Wes Floral. I'm from Rochester. I'm a Vietnam veteran. And I'm opposed to this war, as I was the Vietnam War, after seeing the results of the devastation that war causes in countries. Supposedly it was going to last 3 weeks, and now we're 3 years, and the results still are unclear.
My name's Leo Sandy. I'm a Vietnam-era veteran, and want to be here to end this war. It was an illegal, immoral war, unconstitutional as well. And so I feel I have to be here to give my voice to the cause of ending this war.
I'm Will Thomas from New Hampshire Veterans for Peace. And first of all, we have opposed this war from the very beginning. We said it would destabilize the Middle East, it would create more terrorists, and sad to say that we were correct. And but one of the major points about being here today is because I think George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, and Mr. Rumsfeld have definitely betrayed our country, our principles. They have violated law, the United States Constitution, the UN Charter, the Nuremberg Principles, the Geneva Conventions, but most importantly, they have betrayed our troops. and by sending them into harm's way without proper equipment, etc., by sending them into a war of choice and not of necessity.
My name is Eleanor Yetton. I live in Concord, New Hampshire. I'm tired of being lied to. I'm tired of my environment being polluted. I'm tired of Bush and his administration trying to pilfer the Social Security system, catering to the rich. I'm trying to do something about this because I believe there are a lot of Americans who feel the same way that I do, but are either scared or don't have the time because they're trying to feed their families, and I've just had enough. I'm not going to take it anymore.
I'm Aiden Banks. I'm 10 years old. I came here because I want the war to end and the Iraqis to be safe.
I'm Al Mason. I'm 11 years old, and I want the war to stop because it is a useless waste of money. There's billions of dollars spent making the bombs and billions of dollars spent rebuilding the place that they destroyed. I think it is just ridiculous.
Outrageous.
Okay.
I'm Lisa Bezogan, and I'm from Sunapee, and I'm 47 years old, and I think the war should stop and that George Bush should be impeached, and we should start turning our dollars and our care on our own country.
Hi, I'm Reverend William Exner. I'm with the Episcopal Peace Fellowship, and I'm here for what I stand for, not what I'm against, and that is nonviolence, and we need more witness to that.
My name is Bindi. I live in Bradford, and I'm out here protesting the war in Iraq. And it seems as though I've been doing 30 years of protesting senseless violence, and I'll keep on doing it.
Hi, my name is Will, and I'm from Hopkinton, and I'm 17. And I came here today because I was against the war, and I really didn't agree with it at all, but I realized that I hadn't been doing anything at all to support my beliefs, and I felt like it was time to try to change something.
What brought you out today?
Oh, is it really?
Okay. Hi, my name's Stan Small. I'm 18. Go Kearsarge High School. We're out here for the anniversary, 30-year anniversary of Iraq, and just protesting the decline of the situation down there, and hopefully have a troop withdrawal pretty soon.
What are you finding in the high school with regards to students getting involved and being active with things like this? Is there much talk? Do you see much action? Or do you feel like you're sort of a minority?
Definitely a minority. There are some groups that are getting more involved now, though. But not nearly as much as I'd like to see.
Nancy from Portsmouth, and member of your wonderful radio. These were some things we were reading in the car on the way, coming over today to Concord. Taking a stand against this terrible war. For each hour you spend shopping, the U.S. government spends about $6 million on the ongoing war and occupation of Iraq. New Hampshire taxpayers are now spending almost $700 million on the Iraqi war and occupation. Had our spending priorities been different, New Hampshire possibly could now have all of the following. This is estimated through with Seacoast Peace Response: 6,000 new affordable housing units, 56 new elementary schools, 62,000 more people receiving health care, 78,000 more college students receiving scholarships, 247,000 more children receiving health care, 16,000+ additional public safety officers. And additional human costs of the Iraq war and occupation include, I would say, 2,350 or something, and they're saying at least, 14,000 seriously injured. Then not to mention all the civilians, what do they estimate, 30,000? Personally, I think it's over 100,000, if not more. So it's good to be here with all the people today and saying this war has to come to an end.
We'll be right back. We're on the State Capitol Plaza right now. There's a gathering, I would say, close to 300 or more people here right now. The signs around us read, 2,300 heroes, God bless them, peace. Wage peace. End hypocrisy now. Out of Iraq by summer, or this Congress is out in November. Stop mad cowboy disease. Impeach Bush and Cheney. Support troops by rejecting unjust wars. Another mom for peace. Bring them home now. No war. End the U.S. occupation of Iraq.
And again, thank you for joining us and standing and marching and singing for peace today on the third anniversary. Thank you.
Bring them back from Iraq, cause they never should have gone there. It was wrong all along to attack. And the price we'll pay is high there. They shouldn't have to die there. Bring them back from Iraq, bring them back. Bring them back, make it soon, cause this fight is not the right one. If you make a mistake, start to pack. And the price we'll pay is high there. They shouldn't have to die there. Bring them back from Iraq, bring them back. Bring them back from Iraq, cause this war is a source of sorrow. And the reasons they gave were off track. And the price we'll pay is high there. They shouldn't have to die there. Bring them back from Iraq, bring them back.
Was Mona Aboud with Bring Them Back. This is Amy Antonucci with Making Waves. Today I'm speaking with Seacoast, New Hampshire resident Andrea LeBlanc about an upcoming exhibition that she has worked to bring to New Hampshire. It is entitled The F Word, Images of Forgiveness, and was created by the Forgiveness Project. We're honored to have Andrea here to tell us about this presentation and about her personal journey. Welcome, Andrea.
Hello.
So, can you start by telling us what the Forgiveness Project is?
The Forgiveness Project is the brainchild of a woman in Britain whose name is Marina Cantacuzino, who I've not ever met, but who in the early part of 2004 joined forces with a photographer, Brian Moody, and the two of them started collecting stories of people, victims and perpetrators of, in some cases, very horrific crimes, who chose, rather than to pursue vengeance and retribution, have come together in many cases and have found forgiveness, and in some cases are working together for peaceful solutions to ongoing violence. The stories come from places all over the world, South Africa, Bosnia, Northern Ireland, the States, and seeing these pictures and reading the stories is a pretty profound experience. It was for me when I first saw it in April last year.
What form is the exhibition in? I understand there are photographs and then information about each photograph?
The exhibit consists of, I think, 24 or 27 panels of both a large poster-sized picture of the people involved and then the text, and they're on freestanding frames. So it's a very kind of contemplative experience to be able to walk among these panels and take the time slowly to read the stories. When I first saw it in Oklahoma City last April, when a group of us were there for a workshop to commemorate the 10th anniversary of the Oklahoma City bombing and also to do a roundtable discussion, out of which came a documentary called Beyond Retribution. This was the first showing in the United States of the Forgiveness Project's The F Word exhibit. We were all very, very moved by the stories that we read, many of which have never been told or publicized anywhere else. Some people, Desmond Tutu and Father Lapsley, are well known to some, but many, many of these stories have never been told to the public.
Can you say more about how you got involved? You said that you went and saw the exhibit. Can you say more about your involvement in the Forgiveness Project and also with 9/11 Families for Peaceful Tomorrows, which I know is the organization that you usually work with?
I'm not a member of the Forgiveness Project. We have kind of partnered, in a sense, with them only because of the happenstance of one of our members, Andrew Rice, who lives in Oklahoma City. He, when he was in South Africa, was asked by the Forgiveness Project people if he would be one of the stories. He lost his brother in 9/11 in the World Trade Center. So he brought the exhibit to Oklahoma City for the 10th anniversary of the bombing there. As a member of September 11th Families for Peaceful Tomorrows, five of us traveled to Oklahoma City to participate in this workshop, which also included members of the Oklahoma City bombing survivors and people who had lost loved ones. Michael Berg, whose son was beheaded in 2004 on television. Father Michael Lapsley, who lost both hands and an eye to a letter bomb that he received when he was in exile. He was the chaplain to the ANC and received a letter bomb from the apartheid government. It was a pretty amazing group of people to sit and talk with. And then to have the chance to go and read the stories of all these other people who had all suffered horrific violence in their lives in one way or another, and have, like Peaceful Tomorrow's members, decided or come to the conclusion, reacted in a way that wasn't the way that society, I think, supposes a victim will or should react. There's an assumption that if you are the victim of a crime or of terrorism, that you will, of course, want retribution. And I think the thing that drew all of us together was our individual responses that didn't fit this picture. I, for one, am very grateful that September 11th Families for Peaceful Tomorrows exists, because I felt very much alone after September 11th. I just couldn't join in the sentiment, the rhetoric of wanting more violence, retribution. I don't think that ever has solved anything, and I certainly don't think it has solved anything since 9/11. The members of Peaceful Tomorrows have taken it upon themselves to network with other victims of terrorism all over the world, in Spain and Japan. I spent last summer in Japan, and London, in Brazil and Colombia, in Italy, in South Africa. It's an amazing feeling for me to be a part of this network, and it's very, I don't know what the word is, inspiring, hopeful, that there are all these people all over the world for whom violence is just not the answer. I feel so much more a part of that community than I do sometimes even a citizen of the United States. I think that there's wisdom there that I don't find when I hear the angry talk.
And Andrea, you lost your husband on September 11th.
My husband was professor of cultural geography at the University of New Hampshire for 35 years. He had retired in 1999. I think Bob would most definitely have been opposed to certainly the war in Iraq, and I suspect the bombing of Afghanistan, where, you know, we accomplished very little except to kill countless innocent people.
Why do you think this project is so important that you worked so hard to bring it here to New Hampshire? What are you hoping that people will take from it and learn from it?
In my heart of hearts, I would really love for this exhibit to be, if not permanently, at least moving about within the cities and towns of this country where the average person would just come upon it. The stories are so amazing, and I really hope that many, many people come to it. These are ordinary people. And I think that when you read the stories and discover that people whose lives in many cases have been torn apart, who have had great losses, have chosen to respond in a way that doesn't involve retribution, doesn't involve more violence, doesn't involve hatred. In many cases, I would read the same sentiment that we have a choice, and we can choose to let our lives continue to be dominated by hatred. We can continue to be victims, or we can choose to forgive, or to at least learn to see that there's a better, another way of dealing with violence. I honestly think that every person involved in this project probably would agree that violence only begets more violence. And somehow, out of their particular pain, these people have chosen to not respond in a very, I don't know, it's been described as instinctive animal instinct to retaliate. And there are people who have said, well, is it not possible for the human species to evolve beyond that? I think it is. You know, I think it is. I think we have a choice. We aren't just instinctive beings. We have a mind. We have reason. We can look at what happens when violence is perpetuated, and we can make a choice.
I'd like to read this quote from the exhibit, quote by Archbishop Desmond Tutu. Forgiveness does not mean condoning what has been done. It means taking what has happened seriously, drawing out the sting in the memory that threatens to poison our entire existence. In the telling of stories like these, there is real healing. I'd like to ask you what forgiveness means to you and how it's coming forth in the exhibit. The term forgiveness, I'm not sure everyone would define it the same way, and I'm wondering how you might define it or see this exhibit as defining it.
Well, I'm not sure that everyone involved in this exhibit, and even September 11th family members who we've come together to talk about it, define it in the same way or feel that they even are able to forgive. It's true that anger is a normal reaction, and many people have said that as long as they feel the anger, they feel incapable of forgiving. But I'm not sure that that's really the point. Father Lapsley, in a conversation I had with him last April, I said, you know, I never felt angry. I felt sad. So I'm not sure how I can talk about what I've done with my anger. And he very quietly said, I'm not angry either, but I don't know who to forgive, because he doesn't know who sent the letter bomb. You know? And he said, I'm hoping someday that someone will come and knock on my door and say, I sent that letter. I sent that bomb. And then I'll have someone to forgive. It was a pretty profound experience to sit there and listen to these stories. It's when I was in Japan last summer, I had the opportunity to speak with a group of Japanese hibakusha, the survivors of the A&H bombs. We were talking about choice and the fact that we do have choices. things happen. You can be angry or you can be profoundly sad. And in either case, the anger or the despair can ruin your life. You have a choice to make about what you're going to do with those feelings. You may not have the choice about the feelings that arise, but how you respond to them is a choice. One of the things that came out of South Africa that developed after the apartheid government was defeated was the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. And also Father Lapsley has the Healing of Memories Institute. And essentially people have come together and told their stories. And in that, there is a recognition of the other person as a human being. It's harder to discredit or deny the humanity of someone if you actually see them, hear their stories, understand what they've suffered in their lives, etc., and listen to their remorse, their pain. I think it comes of understanding. There's a huge problem when we think we know what someone else's life is like and why they do the things they do. There's another quote from Solzhenitsyn. If only there were evil people somewhere insidiously committing evil deeds, and it were necessary only to separate them from the rest of us and destroy them. But the line dividing good and evil cuts through the heart of every human being, and who is willing to destroy a piece of his own heart? I mean, I think in many cases people have said, you know, we're all capable of doing horrific things, and knowing that the evil and the good are embodied in every one of us is important to realize.
Where can people go to find out more about the project?
The Forgiveness Project will be exhibited at the Oyster River High School on April 1st as a part of the Art and Craft of Teaching Peace. It's the second Teaching Peace conference at Oyster River High School. It will stay through April 3rd so that students and public can see it, I think, into the early afternoon on April 3rd. Then the exhibit will move to the Memorial Union Building at the University of New Hampshire, where it will be for the 4th and 5th. It then moves to Concord, New Hampshire, to the South Congregational Church on Pleasant Street from the 6th through the 10th. Then it comes back to the Durham Community Church and will be there from the 11th through the 14th. There are a number of programs and events that will be associated with the project, and it will certainly be open to the public. The night of the 11th, there will be an interfaith service with many area clergy.
There's also a general website about the project. Mm-hmm.
The Forgiveness Project website is www.theforgivenessproject.com.
And as far as local happenings, is there a website to find that information about times and such?
SeacoastPeaceResponse.org.
What other resources for the groups and projects you're involved in are there? Where can people learn more about, for instance, September 11th Families for Peaceful Tomorrows?
September 11th Families for Peaceful Tomorrows website is just www.peacefultomorrows.org. There's information about all the activities, the various members all over the country and some out of the country. The DVD that I mentioned, Beyond Retribution, you would click on a photo icon that says our new DVD. Stonewalk information about last summer's epic event. We walked with a 2-ton granite stone to commemorate the civilian casualties of war from Nagasaki to Hiroshima, 370 miles. We pulled it on a caisson that had steel wheels and a steering wheel and a brake, but no power except for people power. And it was an amazing way to see Japan. People would come and leave and come back. It was like we were a bit like the Pied Piper, you know. And it was lovely because we had people in their 70s, we had mayors of towns, we had school children, we had families, we had students. It was a lovely experience. Monks, people of all faiths, we stayed in churches and temples and people's homes and schools and community centers all along the way. And the Stonewalk information you can find at www.stonewalk.org.
Where is the stone now?
The stone is in Hiroshima, and it's on the grounds of the National Cathedral for Peace, which was built by the Germans primarily, but I think other countries contributed, and it seemed a fitting place. There's talk right now among the Japanese, who we worked with last summer, about taking the stone to Korea, which would be an enormous undertaking, but a really good one. When I was in Japan last year, at the end, on August 6th, there's this huge ceremony in Hiroshima which commemorates the bombing, and it was the 60th anniversary of this last year. I read an apology from the members of Peaceful Tomorrows to the Japanese people for the bombing. There were many Japanese people who came up and thanked me and said that now it was their turn to go apologize to the Koreans. To me, that's a huge step forward. You know, I don't think our governments are ever going to do that, but we as individual people can do it.
Do you have hopes, speaking of governments, of our government, the U.S. government, finding a way to embody or live up to some of these ideas and ideals that projects such as Stonewalk or the Forgiveness Project are putting forth?
I think we always have to have hope. And to me, that's one of the things that the Forgiveness Project does, is it gives me hope, because there are people who understand this. I was very struck by the fact that in both peace museums in Nagasaki and Hiroshima, there's a lot of space given to telling the story of what the Japanese were doing, the responsibility of the Japanese before World War II. I think owning one's responsibility is enormously important. It's a beginning. And I really wish that a similar kind of admission or clear-sighted look at our culpability for what culminated in 9/11, you know, our long history of foreign policy that in many ways has created such animosity among other people in other countries. And I would love it. I think it would be a huge step if the Ground Zero Memorial had some such statement. I have no hope that it will. But having said that, we talk about our government like it's some other entity. We are this government. And until we hire the people, elect the people who will do what we need them to do, then we're not being responsible. I mean, if enough of us say this is what we need to do, then yes, I think there's hope that this government, our government, can be effectively decreasing some of the poverty, the pain and suffering, the inequities in this world. And I think that's what the war on terror should be about.
Thank you so much for speaking with me today, Andrea, and good luck with all of your wonderful work.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Can you call on your imagination as if telling a myth to a child? Put in the fantastical, wonderful, magical, add the romantic, the brave and the wild. Once upon a time there was a power so great that no one could know its name. People tried to claim it and rule with it all with such arrogance, ended in shame. Thousands of years would pass in a moment, hundreds of cultures would come and go, each generation with a glorious calling, even when they were too busy to know. And then one day, after too creatures sent from the power, souls that have come with one purpose in mind, to do one thing that will alter the outcome, and maybe together we can do it in time. Can you call on your imagination as a telegonist to a child? Put in the fantastical, wonderful, magical, at the romantic, the brave, and the wild.
That was Planet Called Home by Holly Neer. Now we hear a short talk by Sansara Taylor, co-initiator of the World Can't Wait, Drive Out the Bush Regime campaign, and writer for The Revolution. She spoke to an organizers' conference in September 2005 on Changing History is Not a Spectator Sport.
I wanted to come back with an analogy which I think will help to illustrate the stakes and the approach that we must take. So now you have to imagine that me and maybe a handful of you are somehow in a basketball game playing against the NBA. I guess you could tell who's probably winning. But we're playing against the NBA and we're told it's the third quarter, we're totally getting whomped. I mean, we're getting whomped. And we can't get our hands on the ball. Every time we try to, the refs call us foul. And as we're playing, we start to realize these refs are not playing fair. They're on the other team's side. So we're sitting here, we're losing, but we understand that for some bizarre reason in this game of basketball, we understand that the whole future of humanity is resting on whether we win this game or not. We don't get a second shot. It's all coming down to this. And here we are in the third quarter, and we're losing. We don't know how to play this game. They have the game down, the rules down, and the refs are on their side. And we're sitting there, and we look out to the stadium, and we see these thousands and thousands of fans and all these people who know what's riding on this game. And you could see their faces, and part of them, they're rooting for us, but we're losing. And in the other part of their face, you see that they're starting to resign themselves, that nothing's going to be done, and nothing can be done. And so we are sitting here, and here we are, and this is sort of what's developing in the world. It's very closely coming to that decisive moment where you either pull from behind and you win this game or you don't. And so what do we do? I think we here have to be the core that immediately recognizes that we have to stop playing this game by these rules. We have to stop playing this game by these rules. We're never going to win. This game is not set up for us. We have to break the rules, get out of bounds, and we have to look to the stadium, to those thousands and thousands of faces, and we need to struggle with them. Get your down here. Get on the floor. Come down here. We're going to overwhelm this other team. We're not playing by these rules anymore. Everybody out of the stands. Everybody up. No more passive observers. We're in a fight for the future here. And that's going to be a struggle. People aren't going to, they came to watch a game. They didn't know that they came to play a game. We're going to have to change it. This is going to be a struggle. It's true. This is people. But that's how it goes in this country. People are trained that you just watch politics go by and you hope that your guy will do something good. And maybe you can pressure your guy to do something good, but the truth is people need to get out of the stands and they need to play this game. And we need to play a different game. And now is the time we need to do this.
That was Sansara Taylor, co-initiator of World Can't Wait, Drive Out the Bush Regime campaign, and writer for The Revolution. And now, Emma's Revolution with One by One.
We have come to this place to renounce this disgrace. Brick by brick, wall by wall, we will make this building fall. We have watched
one by one
the SOA,
one by one,
that someone tried
one by
whisk away,
one by one.
But this school,
one by one,
drenched in shame,
one by one,
cannot hide,
one by one,
behind a name,
one by one.
We have paid,
one by one,
against our will,
one by one,
while men torture,
one by one,
maim and kill,
one by one,
we'll return.
will stand. We will sing. We will demand. We have each received.
Emma's Revolution with One by One. And now, Bonnie Raitt with This World Is Not Your Toy.
God is great, God is good. He guards your neighborhood. Though it's generally understood, not quite the way you would. Try to take a slack. You stay awake and you watch your back. Something happens every now and then. Someone breaks into the promised land. Oh, boy, boy. This world is not your toy. This world is long on hunger. This world is short on joy. You've done. What's good about a world in which war rages at a fever pitch and people die for the little things, a little corn and a little beans? Whoa, boy, boy, this world is not your toy. This world is long on hunger. This world is short on joy, long on hunger, short on joy. How much longer you gonna keep the world hungry and bored? You measure your peace with guns. Your progress is in megatons. Well, who's left when the war is won? A soldier of a misfortune. A soldier of an angry call. Soldiers on foreign soil. Well, we're not here to fight your war, 'cause we know what you're fighting for. This world is a long, long hunger. This world is short on joy. Well, long, long hunger, short on joy. How much longer? Keep the world hungry and bored.
Bonnie Raitt with This World Is Not Your Toy.
To hear our previous shows, please visit our archive online at www.freewebs.com/sprav/audio.htm. Please email nhmakingwaves@yahoo.com and let us know what you think of our show. And feel free to call the station in the next hour for more information, 430-9722.